Well, here we are in the depths of winter, and on Monday, large parts of the world will celebrate what is possibly one of the most confused festivals in the traditional Christian year, Christmas. Some years ago, my wife went into a local greengrocer, a fruit and veg merchant for our American listeners, at this time of year, and as she was checking out, the lady behind the till asked whether Christmas was as a big thing in America as it was over here. She answered that my family doesn't keep Christmas, but for the most part, it's mainly just a big commercial thing over there now. Then the lady asked, well, what about you? Do you keep Christmas now that you're over here? And she replied, well, no, I don't keep Christmas. She looked very surprised and asked, are you Catholic or something? Christmas has indeed become a major commercial season, with a staggering sum of £27.6 billion planned to be spent this year in the UK and an eye-watering $178 billion spent in the US just on gifts, perpetuating the lie of Father Christmas. As well as presents, many people take their children on trips to Lapland to see Santa. Noticing that there was a travel agency in Carmarthen offering such trips, my wife went in to ask how much it cost. Although the price varies based upon the length of the trip and the activities you wish to do on the trip, the base cost for one night was a staggering £600 per person. For more time or more activities, it went up to £1,200 per person. However, the lady was very keen to point out that meals were included. The actual origins of Christmas dates back to just this side of the flood, as Mr. Armstrong explained in a sermon that we heard just a few weeks ago. And he says, well now, where did this we get this Christmas thing? An ancient Egyptian sculpture of Madonna and child, with the sun over her head and holding a little child in her arms, long before Christ, was picturing Semiramis and Horus. And Horus was just another name for Nimrod. And you read about Nimrod in the Bible in Genesis. He then reads about the ancestry of Nimrod and how he became a mighty one, and then goes on to say, now Nimrod was a ruler. He was forming a type of civilization. He was ruling the lives of people, but he was led by his wife/mother, Semiramis, and she married her own son. Semiramis usurped the rule, and she's the one who called herself the Queen of Heaven. She knew that a Madonna would come, a virgin would conceive and bear a child. They had a little bit of that tradition, but they got it all mixed up. So she became the mother of Sol, the sun god, and she called Nimrod that sun god. And that was the origins of Christmas, celebrating the birth of the sun god, or Nimrod. As I have mentioned in previous sermonettes, I grew up in the church and never really had anything to do with this world's festivals, which has led to some memorable misunderstandings, up to and including asking whether Noel was Welsh for tree. So continuing with my theme of trying to understand the origins of this world's festivals, in the time that I have today, I would like to look and examine two areas of Christmas and look at where they came from, what they symbolise, and what God thinks about them. First, we'll examine the seasonal decorations that pop up at this time of year, and we'll finish by having a look at a fat red man, also known as Santa. I'm sure we've all seen the garish over-the-top displays in shops and houses at this time of year, decked with flashing lights, tinsels and nativity scenes. But where did these customs come from? In the book Christmas, A Short History from Solstice to Santa by Andy Thomas, he explains, the dressing of houses and churches with greenery is something that became popular in the Middle Ages, a practice that was generally has gradually evolved into the extravaganza people put up today. Christmas trees, in their popular form we recognise today, were still to come, but the medieval fascination with sacred plants was extensive and would eventually lead to the latter's tradition's evolution. Holly, for instance, was said to ward off evil spirits, its spikes providing sharp disincentives for any invading presences. As vegetation that was boldly flourishing in the cold, dark times of this year, when so much else was dark and dormant, This kind of foliage was brought into the home, offering hope to the winter-weary in the northern hemisphere. It reminded people that if nature could push through this harsh times and thrive again, so could they. One superstition has survived from this custom. If you have ever wondered why people believe that Christmas decorations must be taken down on or by the 12th night, some say it's because the country folk believe the greenery was filled with invisible elementals, such as elves or sprites. A truce between humans and the otherworldly visitors was in place throughout Christmastide. So all was well, but the peace ended as the season did, meaning that if you didn't get rid of these mischievous spirits out of the house by then, they would be stuck inside all year, creating havoc and bringing bad luck. Other plants perceived as having magical properties also became part of the seasonal folklore. The parasitic but beautiful mistletoe was used by ancient druids to cure infertility and poisonings. Mistletoe's connection to fertility is probably what would have led to the custom of kissing beneath it. And now the pinnacle of all Christmas decorations, the Christmas tree. A good candidate for the first proper Christmas tree can be found in a German legend from the 1500s. A popular tale credits the reformer Martin Luther with the inspiration. Walking through frosted woods on Christmas Eve, he was so struck with the starlight glistening on icicle-hung tree branches that he brought one home to his family. He is also said to be the first to light up a Christmas tree, inspired by the bright stars in the sky. He attached candles to the branches to remind them that all of the heavens from where Jesus came from. Even now, many trees are topped with a star or an angel, making a clear link to the nativity story. The spread across the English-speaking world, however, is very much due to Prince Albert, Queen Victoria's husband. When the cover of the Illustrated London News in 1848 showed a sumptuous picture of the British royal family's Christmas tree, it caused a sensation and was quickly imitated. By the 1920s, trees were installed in most homes of many countries. Candles turned into electric lights, and today's Christmas would not seem right without a tree somewhere. In the booklet, The Plain Truth About Christmas, Mr. Armstrong explains the origins of the Christmas tree much more succinctly. He writes, "After Nimrod's untimely death, his so-called mother wife, Semiramis, propagated the evil doctrine that the survival of Nimrod as a spirit being. She claimed a fully grown evergreen tree sprung up overnight from a dead tree stump, which symbolizes the springing forth unto new life of the dead Nimrod. On the anniversary of his birth, she claimed, Nimrod would visit the evergreen tree and leave gifts upon it. December the 25th was the birthday of Nimrod." This is the real origins of the Christmas tree. God has some very clear instructions regarding the Christmas tree in Jeremiah 10, verses 2 to 6. So that's Jeremiah 10, and we'll start reading in verses 2. "Thus saith the Lord, learn not the ways of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. For the custom of the peoples are vain. For one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the works of the hand of the worksman, with the axe. They deck it with silver and with gold, they fasten it with nails and with hammers, and that it move not. They are upright as a palm tree, but speak not. They must need be born, because they cannot go. Be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil. Neither also is it in them to do good." Pure speculation, but could it also be that Satan has invented the idea of the Christmas tree as a counterfeit for the tree of life? Taking of the tree of life leads to the spiritual way that provides all good things, while the Christmas tree is also supposed to provide all good things, but in the form of physical presents left by Father Christmas, who, as was pointed out last week, limits and makes a mockery of God the Father. Just pop in your notes Revelation 22 verses 1 to 2, where it explains the role of the tree of life in the future. And if you would like to turn with me to James 1, we'll read verse 17. That's James 1, verse 17. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. God is the source of every good gift, and unlike Santa, who only delivers but once a year, our Father answers our prayers on a daily basis. God makes it very clear what he thinks of man's appointed feasts in Isaiah 1, verse 4. That's Isaiah 1, and we'll read verse 4. Our sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Lord, they have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger, they have gone away backwards. Dropping down to verse 14, your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hateth, they are a trouble unto me, I am weary to bear them. And if anyone's ever gone into Tesco this time of year, we're all weary of it too. Moving on, we'll talk about the fat red man, also known as Santa Claus, or sometimes Father Christmas. With regards to the origins of Santa, the earliest reference to a great being who soared in the skies around the solstice would seem to be the Norse god Odin, who led the ghostly wild hunt across the skies at Yuletide. Later tales tell of him flying across the world on a curiously eight-legged horse, Sleipnir, bearing gifts for the good, but in some versions abducting the bad. The multi-legged horse may have become the multi-legs of the flying reindeer, and the wild hunt turned into a friendlier tour of generosity around the globe. As to why reindeer might be flying in the first place, the shamanic culture of the Arctic Circle, not far from Father Christmas's home in the North Pole, may provide the answer. The Sami people of the northern Scandinavia and Siberia celebrate the shamanic properties of the Amanita muscaria, or fly agaric, an attractive red mushroom with white spots. Eating it can be damaging to the health. The detrimental properties were believed to be modified, however, if it was boiled. After this, the hallucinogenic properties of the mushroom may have made it easy to imagine you were flying with the reindeer. And the traditional red and white colours of Santa perhaps have more meaning than meet the eye. Shamanic elders were also known to climb into the yurts through the smoke hole if the snow had blocked the entrance, possibly being the origins of the tale of Santa entering a house via a chimney. On the night before Christmas, excited children across the world prepare for Santa's arrival. When Santa leaves, their gifts varies depending on which culture you live in. Stockings or pillowcases on fireplaces or bedposts and other receptacles all seem to be acceptable to this remarkable being. In some parts of the globe, children leave shoes outside to be filled with treats. The presence of chimneys in old houses provides the obvious point of entry to the Western Santa. As they reduced in size, even as representations of Santa grew more portlier, more ingenious explanations as to how Santa entered the houses of some several billion people all in one night were devised. Today, the science of quantum physics is used, and a number of scientific websites, albeit tongues firmly in their cheeks, go to intriguing lengths to explain how all this might work. So as we can see, as with all of man's knowledge, it sounds right, but it actually has nothing to do with actual true Christianity. It all comes from the wrong tree, the one covered in tinsel, a substance that Mr. Bowles pointed out in an update last year. It has no real value. In conclusion, to sum up the whole of Christmas, I could find no better description than in the book, A Christmas Cornucopia, and it states, picture a man sitting beside a dead tree. He is indoors and wearing a paper crown. From the ceiling hangs a parasitic shrub that legitimates sexual assault. He is singing to himself about a 12th century Mittal European murder victim using a 16th century Finnish melody. Earlier, he told his children that the house was broken into during the night by an obese Turkish man. This was a lie, but he wanted to make his children happy. You couldn't make it up if you tried.